All right, let's start on the insurance side, and AI for that matter. Greg Williams joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the co-founder and chairman and CEO at AcraSure. Greg, welcome to WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us what AcraSure is. You are an insurance company, right? Brokers?
We're most known as an insurance broker, fastest growing in the world over the last 10 years, and now the fifth or sixth, depending on whose list you want to pay attention to in terms of size and scale, fifth or sixth largest in the world. But I would tell you that most known for insurance brokers, but we're now a product and service, a financial product and service solution that's offering things way beyond insurance. As you look at 70% of our clients have less than 50 employees. If you think about what those businesses' employees need, I mean, those businesses need not only insurance, they need mortgages, they need cybersecurity, they need payroll, they need payment processing, they need all of those things. And so we're in ever increasing the product and service suite and how we can help our clients. So becoming much more than just insurance brokerage in a long-winded way of saying.
What's your footprint in Chicago and Illinois?
So we have actually we just formed the Midwest region here just a few weeks ago, where we've got nine states come together. The crux of it's in the Chicago marketplace in terms of concentration of clients. We have about 50 offices in the Midwest, what we call it in the Illinois and surrounding states, 50 offices. So a big footprint. It's a very important market to us. And we've got great people that are doing great things with those clients in that market.
So what kind of insurance? I know there's a whole suite of services you offer now, and I've noticed that you guys have been in front of the AI space since maybe even 2019. But just describe for me the typical client and the kind of insurance that they get from you.
Well, if you think of, just to touch briefly, if you think about these businesses that have, on average, 50 employees or less, these are not big conglomerates. Their needs are very tend to be in terms of their client base and client concentrations very local, and it's a smattering of industry. Every industry that known to man, or to humankind, we certainly service. And so, if you think of the needs, it is very broad. That's why again we broaden the products and service offering. Is that we've increasingly heard. Our clients want a one-stop shop type of experience. And so it's obviously employee benefits insurance. It's property and casualty insurance of all kinds,
right.
Financial products and services, et cetera.
The insurance rates have gone up industry-wide. What are you doing about that? How has that impacted you?
Well, what we've increasingly done, and again, this is where technology you referenced comes into play, is our ability to have great insights into the marketplace, and I say the insurance marketplace, and bring as many services and product and service solutions to our clients in a technology automated way. Increasingly, our clients want to be met and interact digitally. And so we have both the human involvement, the human capability of a distribution network, but also a digital capability if, in fact, our clients want to search and find solutions on their own when convenient for them and find those solutions again through a digital medium. We have that as well. So that's again where we've kind of how we bring solutions and alternative and access to options,
right,
so that they have the best outcomes. Again, whether we're designing them or they're designing them, we ensure through broad-based access that they have that.
But are you underwriting the policies, or are you finding other agencies, other insurance companies that actually provide the coverage?
Yeah, so we're a broker, so we're not actually underwriting the policies. We work with insurance companies around the globe to bring those products and services and solutions to our clients.
Why have insurance rates gone up so much in the last 6 months?
Well, I don't know that it's been just the last 6 months. Unfortunately, it's been the last couple of years. And when you look at whether it's catastrophic losses through hurricanes and things of that nature, social inflation has been big. Unfortunately, it's impacted everybody, and including insurance rates. Cyber risks have gone up, and so if you think about, do we live in a riskier and more dangerous world today than we did 3 years ago? I think everybody would come to the conclusion that we do.
Greg Williams is the co-founder and chairman and CEO at AcroSure, A-C-R-I, sure, AcroSure.com. Nice to talk to you today, Greg. Good luck. Thanks for the insight.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Bree Fowler talks about ByteDance and TikTok. In fact, I was talking to my son about that, Bree, and you're a senior writer over at CNET.com, and he works with high school students. And I said, what is the platform that the young people are using? And he said, it's not Facebook. And he said, it's really not even Twitter so much. He said, it's Instagram, and it really is TikTok. And he said that if TikTok was banned in the United States, that would be a shockwave through this country, particularly that generation. He was expressing to me that I had no idea what a big deal this would be if somehow TikTok went away in the USA. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, you know, I'm not sure because I talked to my 14-year-old daughter and she's much more into Instagram and a few other things. So she didn't seem to care too much when I talked to her about it. But
interesting.
That's just one kid.
Yeah.
But the thing is, TikTok, if this all does happen, it will be a slow death. And people are going to have plenty of notice, and they'll be able to pivot to other platforms, and who knows what's going to pop up between now and then. Because right now, according to the legislation, TikTok has 9 months to be sold to a buyer that the U.S. government likes, and that period can actually be extended to a full year. So we're not going to see any big changes anytime soon, and that's not even taking into account the fact that TikTok and free speech groups are promising a court fight, which could drag this out even longer.
Well, where is the legislation on this right now? President Biden signed into law a law in legislation that did what?
Well, the legislation he signed yesterday, it sets up the terms and the requirements that it be sold. That 9 month clock starts now. And like I said, if certain conditions are met, it could be extended to a year. But TikTok is about a court challenge. And usually when people challenge laws, there's an injunction or a freeze on the legislation that will, you know, stop the clock on that potentially.
Court cases take way too long. It would seem to me like if we know the window is 9 months or 12, we ought to be able to resolve this legally, constitutionally, legislatively. I don't even have a dog in this hunt. I don't know that I care. I'm very suspicious about ByteDance, but It would seem to me like we could resolve this in a year. This may extend beyond that, huh?
Yeah, and the thing is, a sale of this magnitude, I mean, we've seen, you know, mergers and acquisitions, and this would be a big dollar kind of deal, too. Having this sale actually happen would take a long time, a lot of due diligence, a lot of looking at the books as far as, you know, monetary value, but then also things like source code and algorithms that the Chinese government has said it does not want to fall into the hands of the Americans or American companies. So they don't support a sale. So, you know, the odds of a sale actually happening in a year, a lot would have to be fast-tracked and a lot would have to happen.
Talk to me about artificial intelligence and what the Connecticut legislature passed, or at least the Senate.
Yeah, right. In the absence of federal legislation, you know, some states have taken it upon themselves to kind of come up with their own laws regulating AI. And Connecticut Senate passed, you know, one of the first proposals in the U.S. that would govern bias in AI decision making and try to protect people from harm, including manufactured videos like deepfakes. This is, you know, just the Connecticut Senate right now. It has to go to the House and then be signed by the state's governor. You know, and they're not the only state working on this, too. A handful of states, including Connecticut, have been working together to try to come up with rules and regulations and legislation that could govern AI, because this is uncharted territory right now.
Well, you probably saw the story. Maybe you didn't. It's not a big deal. But evidently in Baltimore, there was a video posted on social media sites of a school principal saying horrible racist things. Turns out that somebody sampled his voice, used AI, and generated speech from him that was not him. It was another employee, in fact, who's since been dismissed. But I think that guy's also been arrested. And I suppose that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's how it can be used, right?
Right. And the thing is the software is getting a lot more accessible and a lot more user-friendly. You don't need to have a computer science degree to do this kind of stuff anymore. People have more access to these kinds of things, and eventually it's going to be really tough for people to figure out what's real and what's not.
Of all the platforms, is Facebook still the king of the hill? I saw what their earnings were. Meta's doing great. Just talk to me about their profitability and their earnings right now.
Yeah, so last quarter's profit doubled to over $12 billion, and it was boosted by higher advertising revenue and increases in the price of ads on its platform. And it's not just Facebook, it's Instagram too, which, you know, when I talk to younger people, and even looking at people in my generation, Instagram gets a lot more traffic than Facebook does these days. And, you know, they did better than Wall Street expected, but they also released revenue guidance for next quarter that wasn't quite exactly what analysts wanted. So their stock was down yesterday. So it's kind of a mixed bag. The company has been investing a lot in AI, like a lot of other companies, and that costs big bucks. And they're also going to face a lot of competition there because basically everybody is doing this now.
What's the state of that AI? It's getting better continually. It got creepy when it was first rolled out by ChatGPT. Can you just give me a short summary of AI right now?
I mean, it's all over the place. And, you know, when you look at it from a business standpoint, it's a lot of these startups, you're trying to figure out, you know, what's marketing buzz and what's real and what's going to be around in a year. I mean, this is always kind of the story with tech and tech companies. You know, what's actually going to turn into something that is tangible and is going to hang around. Right now, you know, it takes a lot of money to power AI, and it takes a lot of electricity too.
Yeah,
so we're
going
to run into power issues. People are already talking about sustainability and, you know, whether this is green. You know, it's more about finding practical uses beyond me asking ChatGPT to tell me things or do things, you know, that kind of stuff. It's about improving chatbots for websites and for customer service. It's about, you know, integrating AI into cybersecurity where it can deal with a lot of the low-level threats and free up people to do, you know, the big ticket stuff.
I think that part of the AI technology about the potential isn't being told or sold enough. I think given all of the reservations we have about it, I think if you just said thumbs up or thumbs down, good or bad AI, people, well, maybe that'll be my news clicked later today. But I think a lot of people are very pessimistic, and I appreciate what Bree Fowler just said, senior writer at CNET.com. Nice to talk to you today, Bree. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for having me.
Pete, we may have a news click to write. Talk to Scott Bauer, the CEO of Prosper Trading Academy. Here we go again, Scott. Let's talk a little bit about the markets and the economy. This latest number came out, has had a bit of an impact today. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so you know, you have a few things going on today, John. First, you had the Meta results from last night, the old Facebook company, which really disappointed the market. So that kind of, you know, in the overnight session and leading into the number this morning really put the markets on its heels. And then this GDP number came out, which was much lower than expected. It came in at 1.6%, which, you know, for the good news is bad news is good news cycle, that could have been a good number for the market because, you know, meaning that things are slowing down. But I think what happened was people took a deeper dive, a deeper look into that number and said, okay, things, you know, are slowing down, but two things. The consumer is still spending. So that's a very robust number, and interest rates are still ticking up. So it was kind of a worst case scenario for that GDP number. That was for the first quarter this morning, and the markets, you know, didn't like it, though I will tell you we are far, far off the lows of the days right of the lows of the day right now. At one point the Dow was down, you know, 500 plus. It's down about 350 now. S&Ps were down about 70 points. Those are only down about 30 now. So the market is making, you know, somewhat of a comeback. But nonetheless, you know, the number wasn't so great. But tomorrow morning is going to be even more important. Tomorrow morning, there's a number that comes out, an economic data point called PCE, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index. That is the one that the Fed looks at to really give them a direction on inflation. That's the one that could really be a market mover.
PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditures. What does that represent? What does that mean?
It's really how much, you know, people are spending and what the economy is looking like, what the business side of things are, but really comes down to how the consumer is doing and what the real inflation number is. So, you know, there's CPI, which we got last week, the Consumer Price Index. This is the one, though, that really breaks it down that the Fed dives into. So, you know, if that is a continued hot number, meaning that, you know, it's showing that inflation is still rampant, prices are not coming down, the market's not going to like it. If it's a number that comes in slightly lower than what the expectation is, we could see a big rally off of that, because that's the economic data point that the Fed really is intently looking at and helping them to determine their interest rate policy.
Well, the Fed's been hoping to tamp down a heated economy, and it would seem to me like today's 1.6 domestic gross product number would be evidence that the economy is cooling. That would signal a potential drop in interest rates. Why isn't that happening here?
Exactly, because we're in this, you know, this news cycle right now that bad news is good news is bad news. So you would have thought that that would have been good, but now you're looking at a situation where maybe the economy is slowing, but at the same time, wages and the workforce is still as tight as it has been. And the Fed is really looking for that workforce number, the unemployment number, actually to go up a little bit. And it's still a very tight market. And that's what they have said for the last couple of years. That's the piece of the puzzle they need to see slow down, the employment end of things. So you're in this situation now where you have low GDP, the wages, the workforce numbers are still really strong. That is something that the Fed is going to be really concerned about, something called stagflation.
Scott Bauer is the CEO of the Prosper Trading Academy. So you counsel people, teach them literally how to trade. Would you say that what is happening now with the stocks falling off a couple thousand points over the last month, we were about to nip 40,000 and we've been below 38. Do you think that this is actually a buying opportunity? And if so, because a lot of people are every month just sending money off to some mutual fund somewhere. Do you think they're going to recoup? I don't want to say these losses, but are they going to see a nice appreciation because they're buying things a little bit discounted right now?
So I'm going to wear two hats here. Number one, I'm going to say it's a great trading environment, you know, short-term trading environment. In terms of, you know, do I want to put money in a little longer term? I'd still be on the sidelines a little bit. I really would. I think that there could be a little pain ahead here before we start recouping. Now, if you ask me where the market's going to be at the end of the year, I think we will be higher. But I do think in the short run here, we could have a little bit more pain, which honestly, I don't think that would be the worst thing for the market. I'm not saying, you know, 10%, 20%. I am not saying that whatsoever. But I think another 5% pullback would be very, very healthy.
Do you think the market's overpriced or parts of it are right now?
I think parts of it are right now. There was so much hype around tech and AI at the end of last year and the first quarter of this year that I think we're, you know, the market's starting to reset and reprice a little bit, which is definitely a good thing because, you know, we definitely got way ahead of our skis, if you will, ahead of ourselves. But listen, the economy is still chugging along here. We've got to get the interest rate situation under control because that is really hampering a lot of people. It's hampering Main Street. It's not not having much effect, not really hurting, you know, the top 1%, the top 5%. But for the rest of us on Main Street, yeah, we're feeling it.
Scott Bauer, CEO of Prosper Trading Academy, prospertrading.com. Okay, Scott, real good. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, John. Have a great one.
More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Peggy Notabart Nature Museum in Chicago is getting a brand makeover, the first in 20 years. The 167-year-old museum is trying to appeal to a wider demographic. Notabart CEO tells Cranes the museum wants to be a place that welcomes all ages, even though people might think it's a place for just children. The museum has launched a new website design and logo. The design prominently features Illinois prairies with a tagline, Inspiring Nature Champions. The rebrand coincides with the launch of a new butterfly exhibit. Northbrook-based Allstate will resume selling new homeowners insurance policies in California. The decision follows a move by California to make it easier for insurance companies to raise rates. The new rules say insurers can raise rates as needed to cover customer claims. Insurance companies have scaled back coverage in recent years because of the increasing frequency and severity of wildfires. More than half of insurers have cut back or stopped coverage in California. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and we are mixing the business of food and the business of good today, because tonight would be a great night to dine out in Chicago.
This is like a really fun way to get together with friends, get together with family, and literally by eating, you're supporting us.
Who she is and what dining out for life is all about after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. On the phone is...
I'm Lorraine Hayes. I'm the Senior Director of Development here at Vivint Health TPAN.
TPAN is an HIV/AIDS organization that's been operating on the north side for more than 40 years, merging a year ago with Vivint Health to expand services to all of Chicago.
A full range of services from a drop-in center for LGBTQIA youth, case management, mental health.
It wasn't that many years ago that HIV and AIDS were considered a death sentence, but Lorraine Hayes says HIV is different now.
Thank goodness, because of medications. If you're taking your medication and you're successful on taking them, you reach a level that's called viral suppression. So you're very, very unlikely. I think it's 1% chance of transmitting HIV to another person. So that's what we strive to do for people who test positive.
And helping those people, many of whom are black and brown, get help in managing their lives is where the money raised tonight will go. There are 20 restaurants who are kicking back a percentage of what you spend to TPAN, including...
We have Auntie Prima, which is in Andersonville, which is a lovely Italian place. We also have Lady Gregory's, which is a Irish-themed restaurant that's in Andersonville. If you're downtown, we also have the Dearborn. We also have Ed DeBevick's, which is really fun.
And new this year is one of the hottest taco joints in Chicago, Taylor's Tacos.
Yes, they just joined, and we're especially happy because a lot of the people that we serve might live on the south and west side. So Taylor's Tacos is our first entryway into that part of the city, so we're really excited to have them.
Dining Out for Life. It's tonight at 20 restaurants in Chicago.
Visit diningoutforlife.com and just look up Chicago, and you'll see our full list of restaurants, diningoutforlife.com.
On the food calendar, it's National Zucchini Bread Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food and good on 720 WGN.
More from the Your Hometown series as we feature the city of Wheaton. Come along with us as we discover why Wheaton should be your hometown. Sponsored by McDonald's.
Yeah, we're talking about Wheaton today on WGN Radio. And this time we visit with one of the shops in that town. Elizabeth Dijon joins us, the owner of Wildflower Mercantile. Or do you say mercantile? Elizabeth, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Answer that question for me. I'm good, thanks. Mercantile or mercantile?
I'm a mercantile, wildflower mercantile.
Well, then you get to be the decider. And then what's this wildflower business? I've heard a little bit about how you named your store or your place, but just tell me about what wildflower mercantile is.
Sure. It's a modern-day mercantile, if you will, offering goods for the soul. So everything from jewelry and home decor to stationery and cards, candles, and we even have a full-service beer and wine bar to visit as you're shopping.
Now, that's a good idea. Isn't it funny how wine and spirits have sort of popped up in retail establishments, both in grocery stores? I went to Nordstrom. They've got a place to have wine. People push their grocery carts around with a glass of Chardonnay these days.
Absolutely. It's all about delivering on an experience. And being a brick and mortar, not having an online presence, it's very intentional for us to deliver on that full body experience. So you're able to shop the store, take in all the eclectic goods that we have across our 1,600 square foot space, and then also kind of enjoy your time in there. So crack open a beer, have a glass of wine. We definitely have a space to park your husbands if needed and have them be entertained in the back room there, having a beer and just chatting with the bartender that we have back there.
You said brick and mortar versus an online presence. You have a website. Do you not sell online? Is that what you said?
Correct. Yeah, we are intentionally brick and mortar only right now. Really, the idea of Wildflower Mercantile came, a number of years ago, and it kind of just dropped in on me and drove this desire for connection and community. And the opportunity arose for me and my family to invest in this business in downtown Wheaton. The same city that I was raised in, the same city that my husband Anthony and I have are raising our three children. And so really the idea is certainly we want to sell goods, but we also want to create connection and community. And you can only do that in the physical sense. And so our priority is just that, creating that beautiful physical atmosphere that people can see, touch, smell products, and unite under kind of one house, if you will, in the community style shopping setting.
The resilience of wildflowers, they come back every year, is why you call it Wildflower Mercantile, right?
It is. The idea dropped in on me in a time in my life where there was a bit of uncertainty, and I had spent over 10 years in corporate marketing, and we had our number three child in 2020, and I just assumed I would go back into corporate marketing. But life certainly has a way of throwing you curveballs and surprises, and it did back then, which really caused pause for me in my life. And it really opened me up to this radical idea of kind of going for this dream that dropped in to open up a store that served as just a hub for the community and also a collection of goods that is just as random as a field of wildflowers.
Yeah.
We have quite an array of products.
And that's what I want you to talk about now. Elizabeth DeJean is on a phone line, the owner of Wildflower Mercantile. It's on Liberty Drive in Wheaton, and Wheaton is your hometown today on WGN. So what are the big sellers?
That's so funny. Everybody asked me that. And as we're just over a month into opening our doors, I would say the big seller is our experience and our environment. There is not one big seller that we have seen. Certainly, the feedback that we have received is that people are just eager to now have a gift store in their community where they can pop in, buy a gift for, you know, their girlfriend, their coworker, their husband, and grab a card along with it and have it wrapped up and ready to go. And so we certainly have something for everybody, which offers a really unique gift-giving experience. And so I would say our number one seller has just been the fact that we're here.
I presume you're the buyer. How much fun is that, or is that terrifying, making decisions with your own money and hoping that you'll be able to sell them?
It's absolutely, it's a riot for me. I'm having so much fun. My husband, who owns his own accounting practice, is now appreciative that I'm buying through the company versus buying for us personally. And so we've really enjoyed it. I get a kick out of meeting makers from all across the country to feature in our shop. And it's wild, and it's just absolutely so much fun.
Just a few seconds left, but just click off for me some of the things I'll find on the shelves there.
You'll find candles that have been hand poured in Glen Ellen by a fellow shop owner, Good Roots. You'll find beautifully handcrafted jewelry. You'll find obviously an eclectic array of wine and beer, along with clothing, home decor, and also some spiritual items such as crystals and incense and things of that nature. So. Really, we are truly as eclectic as a field of wildflowers inside of Wildflower Mercantile.
Wildflower Mercantile, owner Elizabeth DeJean. Okay, well, it's 134 West Liberty Drive in Wheaton. Continued success, Elizabeth. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Wheaton is your hometown today.